Welcome to the Pac-Man Podcast. Here you will find Dr. Cindy Elliser and Kat McKeever, researchers at Pacific Mammal Research, talking all about marine mammals. We will have a variety of ways to share information with you through discussing research articles and news stories, interviews with other researchers, and more. Join us to learn more about marine mammals and have some fun.
Welcome to the Pac-Man Podcast. I'm Cindy.
And I'm Kat.
And this is our, I guess, kind of annual, because we've been doing it, I think, each year we've done the podcast. Our annual, like, just kind of, let's check back with what we did this year and the cool stuff that happened and what we're looking forward to next year is, you know, just kind of reflecting back on all the cool stuff that's been going on and giving you guys kind of an inside scoop of what's happening, because you guys listen to the podcast, but that's not really about us at all. Sometimes, yeah. When we do our own paper, but yeah, it's about other things. So we thought we'd invite you into our world for a little bit and see how excited we are about the stuff that we're doing.
Come learn about Pac-Man for once, mm-hmm. rather than learning about all these other mammals or all these other research topics. It's like, mm-hmm. all right, to get to learn a little bit more about us.
Yeah, which are all very cool, but we're cool too. So we like promote ourselves every once in a while.
Oh, and actually, speaking of that, so before we get into the meat of the episode, which will just be kind of like Cindy said, just a really fun conversation, I do want to remind you guys, if you are listening to this at the end of 2023, which is when we are recording, this is going to be our final podcast episode of the year. Please go ahead and check out our annual fundraiser. The link for that we will leave down in the show notes, but all of these funds go back into the project and helping us continue all of these amazing programs that we'll share a little bit more about here today. So if you would like to support us in a really awesome and tangible way, definitely go check that out. And we'll do some more plugs at the end.
We also have a Facebook fundraiser going too, so you can donate either
way. Yeah, either way. But yes, just a quick plug for that, since we are doing our kind of end of year wrap up. This is always a big part of the end of the year for us. So. Thank you in advance for your support.
Yes, and we can't do it without you guys. A lot of people ask us where we get our funding from, and we're very, you know, we're a small nonprofit, so we aren't really competitive with the bigger government and federal grants. So we have a lot of private foundations and other public companies, but your community support is really what helps us get through everything and have the funds to do what we do. So we appreciate your support. So that was it, right?
Yep. I just wanted to do a little plug before we got into it.
Ooh, and plug, we have super awesome new merch.
Oh yeah. Guys, seriously, go check it out, because it's so cool. I like want everything in there now. It's a problem.
I know. Someone else was like, oh my God, I love that. I want, everybody's coming out with great stuff this year. I want it all. Uh-huh. One of our supporters wrote on Facebook. But we have zip up hoodies with a new design. And on the back has one of our regular designs, but we've got a new design on the front. And we have a totally new design that we have up on some of our shirts. And we have hats now too.
Ooh.
So yeah. So check it out. And that's you can go to our merch store on our website, which takes you to our bonfire place, where you can get all the gear that you need. Or for the presents that you want to give people. Although by the time you do it now, you might not get it before Christmas. So it would have to be after that. But either way, cool new merch, check it out. Okay. Mm-hmm. I think that's it.
That's it.
Okay. So I think we'll just start off with, you know, we are a science-based organization. So the big thing, one of the biggest things that we do is distill all the information that we get and put it into scientific papers that go out into the literature. And then we can share that information with policymakers and those that are making the decisions for conservation actions. So we had two different papers this year, one that was in the works for quite a few years, mm-hmm. and the other one's a bit more recent. But I'll start with the one that we published a couple months ago with about harbor porpoise aggregations in the Salish Sea. So this is with many co-authors, including David Anderson, who is the lead author on the paper from the South Sound and Cascadia Research Collective. So they do harbor porpoise surveys and stuff down there. And we wanted it to also be a transboundary, across the border thing. So we contacted our colleague Anna Hall up in BC. And so we have information spanning pretty much all the way South Sound to all the way up in Canada about these aggregations. And spoiler, they have large aggregations and they're more common than we thought.
So this is one thing too, for those of you who are not really that familiar with harbor porpoise. Typically they are seen in groups of about 1 to 3 animals. So in our area, it's typically about 2 to 3 is the kind of average group size, but mostly you're seeing them in these sort of either isolated or these very, very small groups. So it's kind of a big deal if they're hanging out in large groups, because we know that they do that, but we don't really have a handle on how frequently this is occurring. And I think up until now, it's been a very sort of almost a sort of mythical thing where it's like, oh, I hear there was this aggregation of like 500 animals that occurred at this one point, you know, but it's not thought to be very common at all. And so this was actually kind of a big deal, especially for those of us who are in harbor porpoise research, to actually get feedback on, okay, well, how frequently are these occurring? And like Sandy said, it was actually a lot more frequent than we thought it was.
Yeah, it's basically been anecdotal. Like when we first started 9 years ago, it was like, oh, I saw 100 porpoises over here. I'm like, whoa, that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
What's going on? And then through over the last few years, we've just really kept hearing more. And what's great about this paper too, is that we used obviously research from dedicated scientists that are out there doing research, including us and David and Anna. But we also use community science. So we have some of our harbor porpoise sighting app that many, hopefully some of you listeners have been using that live around here, that document those. We use that data. And we also work with the Whale Watching Association, the Pacific Whale Watching Association, and use data that they collected because they're out on the water all the time, more so than most researchers, just because of just the way the life is. And so we collaborated on with all those different groups to really get a better picture. Like we would not have nearly as much data as we did if we didn't use the community science and the Whale Watching Association data to really understand what's going on with these animals. And we see them year round. They're anywhere from I think it was 20 or more is what we've considered a large aggregation. And so 20 to 100, we're like, wow, that's big. Some people have seen up to like 300 or 400 or 500. And it's like, that's just mind blowing.
Yeah.
And on my bucket list.
Yep. I was just going to say
someday I will see it. But it was a really cool collaboration because from learning what we learned, but also how we learned it, right? Working together. And I think that's really important. We need to do, we need to do more of that and cross those disciplines and boundaries, geographic and disciplinary.
Yeah. And I mean, those of you who are regular listeners to the podcast, you'll know that when we do our journal review episodes, we often talk about this, right? Especially in some of the papers that we reference that have been able to incorporate, whether it's indigenous or community science or whale watching, whatever it is, we really make a point of highlighting that in those papers when we're going through them, because that is a big deal. And it's really important to be utilizing these resources and these bases of knowledge that, granted, they're not scientific research oriented, but at the same time, they're gathering essential information that we can use and often shed a lot more light on things than we would otherwise be able to know just from our own scientific research. So kind of neat to be able to contribute to that ourselves as well with this paper.
It's more representative of what is actually happening.
Yeah,
just
absolutely.
Plain and simple, because we just can't be out there as much as we want to.
So
that was an exciting one. I really, really had fun working on that one. And then the next one, this has been in the works for years. A couple conferences ago, started conversations with our colleagues down in San Francisco, who are kind of the people about harbor porpoise mating, right? They're the ones that kind of first documented that behavior and how we learned what we were seeing up here. And so then they were looking and saying, like, is this just here or is this a worldwide thing? The behavior that these animals do, is it everywhere? And the reason why this is exciting, well, there's lots of reasons, but if you don't know much about harbor porpoise mating, you can just Google that right now and then you'll understand why. but it's very exciting. A lot of times, so these guys don't normally jump out of the water. They're very low-key, elusive, kind of like, I'm not even here. Let me surface over this way. But when they mate, not all the time, but a large percentage of the time, the males will come up always on the left-hand side of the female and leap into the air with everything showing. And it happens in a second, blink and you miss it. But it's a very flashy, very exciting thing that we're just learning that they're doing, because we've been, you know, we as in the harbor porpoise researchers of the world have been, you know, looking at them and paying attention to them, which they, the species kind of has gotten overlooked in the past. So we're like, is this behavior only West Coast porpoises of the United States, or is it everywhere? So our colleagues, Mark Weber, who was the lead author on that one, and Bo Keener, another author from San Francisco. The author list on this paper is very long because they went worldwide, right? So they have a documentation from almost every locale, or at least general locale, that harbor porpoises are, even in like over the Baltic, all the way around, and found that it's the same everywhere. And it's 100% of the time on the left side of the female. That is another paper by Dara Orbach, another co-author of the paper, but you can learn all about why that co-evolved together. They looked into that internally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there is a reason, for those of you wondering, there is actually a reason why that location of male to female is important.
Yep. But that laterality is unique. That's like, for it to be 100% all the time is very rare. Anything 100% in biology is rare.
Yeah.
So it's really, really interesting. And so this paper is from colleagues around the world. We have videos and pictures and everything. And one of our pictures from our study site got put in there, which is exciting. And it's actually a chapter in a book called Sex and Cetaceans. So if you want to learn all about sex and all different whales, dolphins, and porpoises, please go ahead and read the whole thing. But what's super cool about this as well is that all of the individual chapters are open access. So you can just freely download anything that's in there. If you want the book, you have to buy the book. But online, it's freely accessible. So we'll have both of the links to those papers, which both of those, the aggregation paper and the mating chapter paper, are open access, so you can go check them out. But we really wanted to highlight too that collaborative effort, where it's not just mm-hmm. us doing this, it's all these different porpoise researchers, and we're collaborating within the region, we're collaborating around the world. Like, that's how we're going to learn more about these animals. Produces some really cool stuff.
Yeah, and again, I mean, just, you know, you've heard us talk on this podcast about other species and, you know, looking at these journal reviews, and it's so neat to actually be able to do something like this harbor porpoise mating paper, where we've actually extended it. Because, you know, we've talked a lot about how certain species have, you know, specific behaviors to different locations, or perhaps they're only seen doing this in one part of the world. So it's really actually very important from a scientific perspective to know, is this behavior unique to this part of the world, or is it just what they do? Mm-hmm. And again, you know, like Cindy said, harbor porpoises have been, you know, harbor porpoises in the wild have really been overlooked as a research study species. So to be part of this and to actually be able to say, like, no, this is a universal harbor porpoise trait, as far as we know, is kind of a huge deal. So mm-hmm. that was very, very exciting.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well said. Those are the biggest, those are our papers for the year, which we're, again, very, very, very excited about both of those. The next thing that, for research wise, that I'm super excited about is our eDNA work, or environmental DNA. And for those of you who don't know what that is, it's basically taking water, dirt,
snow,
like grass clippings, like ice, whatever, in the environment, and being able to pull DNA from it. Mm-hmm. So in this case, we're not collecting dirt because porpoises don't live in dirt, but they live in water. So this was shown by Kim Parsons up in Alaska to be able to be done for harbor porpoises. And it's really the fascinating thing that, you know, everybody's just walking around, including animals, and you're sloughing off cells. Like, that's just what happens. And I was talking with somebody else, I don't remember who it was, but they were like, well, what cells are you getting? I'm like, just the ones that they slough off as they normally do. And they're like, I didn't even think about it, but.
Right.
It makes sense.
It's kind of weird. I mean, it's like kind of icky to think about in a way, but yeah. You're just sloughing off skin cells like all the time, but we are, that's a real thing.
Right. I do that to tell that to my students. And when I'm teaching biology, I'm like right now, you're just leaving skin cells all over the desk, you know? They're like, ooh. Gross. But it's really great because then you can non-invasively collect data. And sometimes when they're not even like, not even around, like for on terrestrial stuff, they can like pick up sand and, you know, whatever thing has passed by there in the recent past, they can pull the DNA from. But in this case, the harbor porpoises are trickier, as with they are for everything. They don't slough off as much as other animals do, and concentrated enough to be able to just like scoop a little bit of seawater and find it. And you have to be, at least from what we know right now, relatively close to when they just dove. So what you do is you get in your boat with your permit, because you do have to have a permit to get close to these guys. And we do have our NOAA permit to do so. And you come up, and after they dive, you go up to where what's called the fluke print, where they the concentric rings kind of flow out as they dove, and you scoop seawater. You have to scoop a fair amount of seawater, again, to get enough concentration of DNA to be able to be used. But so it's tricky, and how exactly to go about doing it has been eluding us a bit with the technology that we have. But we recently collaborated and talked with a group up in BC that is their it's called OceanWise, and they actually told us about this cool new technology. They've been doing harbor porpoise eDNA up there, and it's an eDNA citizen scientist collection unit. So like you can just get that and then go out and collect it. Very, very simple. And that really reduced the barrier for us to be able to do this, because it was a game changer. Because otherwise you have to scoop the water and then get it somewhere really quick, like within 12 hours or 24 hours at the max, and have the water filtered to get the DNA out. And that's just not, like, we don't have a lab. Can't do it in my car. Spoiler alert. And so that, and then, oh, I can get out today, go out in the boat, but then they can't come pick up samples. It's a real difficult thing. So this nixes all that. So you can just collect it, and it collects in the filter, a self-preserving filter on the boat. So you scoop the water, suck it up through the filter, and then put the filter back into a little baggie, and you can hold on to that for a long time, probably, you know, a year or two or something like that before you need to, and possibly longer, before you need to then analyze it by extracting that DNA out and then looking at the sequence to determine if you've got found porpoise DNA. So with that, we have the tool. Great. We got it. We got a grant. Thank you, Ruth Foundation, for allowing us to do that, to get the equipment and the filters that we need. So we were able to go out with our friends with the Sailor Sea School here in Anacortes with their boat and collect our first eDNA samples. We got 4 of them. Very excited.
Fingers crossed. Stay tuned for more on that. If you are not on our newsletter, make sure that you sign up to that, because we'll be sharing a little bit more once we're able to get those samples processed, and we'll let you know. We're keeping our fingers and toes crossed that we have some DNA samples in there.
So then again, that's the first step, right? Is we want to make sure that the way we've collected it, do we need more water to go through it? You know, we only did 2 liters. Do we need 4 liters? You know, what, you know, is our process good enough to be able to collect the DNA that we need? And so what's great is that the OceanWise, just going to sign the agreement here to send off and send them our samples, and they will be able to process them and then basically do that first step of saying, yes, you have harbor porpoise DNA, and or yes, you do or do not have enough to do further analyses. But that's the first step, is knowing that we actually collected the DNA from those fluke prints, because it's real tricky on how quickly do you have to get there, and there's no information about what that degradation timeline looks like. Like how quickly do you have to get to that fluke print before the DNA is so dissipates so much that it's not concentrated enough. So there's lots of things to figure out, but we're very excited. They have our first samples. We did do a little reel on that. Or you can check out on our Instagram and Facebook. We did some posts, but we're very, very, we've been trying to get this done for years as well.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, and it's kind of, I was going to say, it's kind of a cool example of, like you said, because we have had this on our radar, for such a long time. It's nice to finally A, get it done, but also it's interesting how the technology finally caught up to allow us to do it in a way that's feasible for us, which is pretty cool. So
And some of that is in research is waiting to until the time is, not waiting, but like you're still working on things, but until a point where it goes, oh, okay, this is what I needed to now make this more accessible and able to be done. Right. And that happens in a lot of different ways in research. The technologies, our questions are oftentimes ahead of the technology we have to be able to do that. Because we're not genetics people. I'm going to give you a spoiler there.
Yes, also that. As you might know, if you've ever listened to our journal review episodes, and there's a lot of genetics in there, we kind of, you know, we kinda smooth right over there. And
yeah,
it's not either of our disciplines.
Right. So like, I can't go be like, oh yeah, sure, I can do this lab thing. And, blah, 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 blah. And you know, no, I mean, I could learn how to do it, but you know, that's not our main thing. So it's great when the technology like this can get us to the point where we can get the samples and then send them off to the experts that know what they're doing. That first step though is not something that we need to be able to do that ourselves. And now we can't. So
yeah, very exciting.
So stay tuned. Hopefully, I'm not sure how long it'll take for them to run the samples, but I think fairly quickly once they get in. So within the next few weeks or you know month or two, hoping to have some answers. So, we're gonna end up talking forever about our awesome year, but just a few more things. We had the most interns that we've had so far
ever in 9 years.
Yes,
in 1 year. Well, I guess ever in 1 year. I should reframe that.
Although it's probably more than a couple years combined.
probably. Yeah. So for those of you who don't know, again, we are a pretty small nonprofit, but one of the big things that we like to be able to do is to host internships. So these are often either undergraduates or recent graduates who are looking to gain some hands-on practical experience doing field research, who are interested in going into the STEM fields or marine mammal science specifically. And doing these types of research internships is pretty important, especially if you're in the marine mammal field. That is really something that employers look for, that it's really important if you're wanting to go to grad school to have this type of hands-on practical experience. So we're really fortunate and in a fortunate position to be able to host these interns. It's always really exciting when we are able to do that. And like we said, this year we were able to host a lot of them, which has been super, super exciting.
Yeah. And it's rewarding for us too, to be able to, we both have gone through that, right? We've both been in ways where we're doing internships or we're doing grad student, we're doing whatever, we're doing this work and learning from people in the field, and that hands-on experience, but also the interaction with your elders in that field, right? Learning from that is invaluable. Like it really is. And we're here to answer questions that they have about grad school or about how they should go about doing this. I want to do this. And, you know, they're learning more than just the research that we're doing. It's about the field and the world that's set in, you know, how does that all work? So, we really enjoy getting to give back for what we got when we were younger, and just share that with the students and see their excitement. And I'm super excited to keep track, you know, and keep in touch with, the interns and see where they go. 'Cause there's going to be some cool stuff. There's one that's doing shark research, and that was her main thing. She went to grad school for that. And we have some of the ones that are just applying to schools now. So very excited to see where they go and where they end up, and super happy to be able to be there for them and help them learn and have them teach us some stuff too.
Yeah. It's very fun.
Yeah. So we host like 2 to 3 interns per quarter. And what the last note about that we've been really excited about is it's kind of gained steam over the last couple of years, but we really have gotten a lot of interest. And we've had people from the East Coast. We have 2 or 3 that have come over for the internship from the East Coast. And that's really exciting to see how far our word is getting out about us.
Yeah, for sure. So again, watch this space. If you're interested in interning with us, or if you know someone who might be, you can check all that out on our website too, if you are curious to learn more about that.
Absolutely. The other really big thing is that we, as they say in Jaws, we're going to need a bigger boat. And we need a bigger boat. So we had our great little Boston Whaler Open Top Boston Whaler. That was great for us for a while, but we really need to be able to get a little bit farther out than we can get with that one. Especially with being able to eat DNA now, and also we need to be dry and warm.
Yeah, based in the Pacific Northwest, it's kind of a big deal.
Yeah. And this is great. So with our colleagues at Smelts up in the Bellingham area, they are been fantastic supporters of our work. And we just can't say enough about them. And we did do a podcast interview with Rich from Smelts earlier. So go back and take a look at that from a couple years ago now. But they're doing ropeless fishing gear. So they also help us do a passive acoustic device, having it deployed without a line. So it's a special made rig where we put our sound trap in it, and then it goes to the bottom, and then we can go back out and do an acoustic trigger, and it makes the thing inflate and it pulls it up and you can collect it and everything. So it's a really cool technology to be able to put things out without having lines in the water that can be harmful to other animals and particularly marine mammals. So that's what they do. And they love harbor porpoises and they love what we're doing. And so they had this connection with this boat that their friend was ready to, deciding whether he wanted to keep or not, and decided not. And he really was excited about the work that we're doing as well. And so we were able to get that for a very good price. And we'd not have been able to do it without Smelts and the guy who gave it, sold it to us for that very good price. So we really want to thank them for that. But yeah, it's a Alaskan fishing boat, actually. It was built to do fishing in Alaska. It's got a nice little with a door, and it has a cover.
Right, and actual cabin top. And
actual cabin.
Yep. So yeah, stay tuned. That's again, it's going to be a lot more, hopefully a lot more photos of us on the boat next year. Mm-hmm. We'll hopefully be getting out in that and starting to collect some of our eDNA samples from our boat, which will be really, really exciting. So
and get some more photos away from Burrow, so you can find some of our animals and see where they're going.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it'll be a hopefully kind of a game changer for us, which will be super, super fun. So stay tuned on that one too.
Yes. And so the funds that we're raising this year, particularly, will be really helpful because we do need to get a new engine for it and have a few things fixed up, because it's been dry but it's been sitting for a while. So, some of the fiberglass work needs a little updating and things like that. So there's a few, as anybody knows, it has a boat or a car or anything like that. There's maintenance that needs to be done. And so we have to do a little bit of that before we can get it out. So we're hoping to do that this winter and spring and get out as early as we can next year. So very exciting. So thank you again to all our collaborators, whether that's on papers or in funding or in getting equipment and just learning from each other. We really can't do what we do without that. So it's an important part of our work. I think we have a little bit of time. I'm gonna do one field story, and if you have a one that pops out in your mind, go ahead and throw it in after me before we briefly discuss what we're looking forward to next year. But most recently, I just came back from a trip, and I was out in the field. And normally, going back to the mating, right? Normally, it's really hard to capture these moments because they literally do not give you any kind of precursor that something's going to happen. Mm-hmm. You just happen to have the camera situated on some animals, and then they do it in front of your camera and catch it. And then even then, it's so quick that sometimes all you get is a splash at the end. And you're like, that's not helpful. So we have, many of them documented, but many more that we don't. So this field session stuck out to me specifically because I was watching these animals in part of the pass where our study site is. And I was looking and I was like, there's something weird going on there. Like somebody kind of surfaced kind of oddly. And so I was focusing in on that. And then bam, it happened right after that. And I was like, they finally let me know that something was going to happen beforehand. It gave me a chance. It gave me a good chance to be able to get it. And I did get the picture, and it was actually one of my favorite ones because it's the first time where the male is almost all the way out of the water, just as flukes are in the water, completely straight up and down. And the female had flipped so far that she was inverted upside down. So her flukes are in the air and her head's in the water. And they're like right next to each other. And he, of course, is very excited, if you know what I mean, in the picture as well. So it was,
this is a PG podcast, so you're going to have to go check out our pictures for more details. But, you know, go check it out.
That's it, right? But that was very exciting. So I was, it was just cool because like they actually let me know something's going to happen first.
Yeah, I know. That was super, super fun.
It was neat.
Trying to think. Yeah, I think let's just move on to what we're excited about for next year.
Okay. So, I mean, a lot of the same stuff as we're doing, but one thing we'd like to highlight is our research assistant, Sierra, is working on a seal paper. And so for those of you who guys who don't know, we do porpoises and seals. The seals have kind of been on the back burner because the porpoises have just been more important in the fact that we just don't know as much about them. And we kind of focused on them at first, but we have been collecting thousands of photographs a year. but not being able to get through them yet. And right now we are working on a program that will be able to help us do that automatically, doing AI assisted ID work. But that's a whole nother project that we're working on for next year, is to get that working, because it takes a bit of input. But in the meantime, Sierra is our seal lady. That's what we call her.
Yeah, she's a seal gal.
She's a seal gal. She has been painstakingly going through the 2015 to 2019, so like 4 years worth of, 4 or 5 years worth of photos to identify them. So she's like, oh, that's Boo. Oh, that's Curtis. Oh, that's whatever. She knows all these seals, and so she's gone through and done all that photo ID work and is working up the data about how often we see them, that we're sighting. Do we see seasonal differences? And what's really important about this is the fact that we're doing this in the water. So most of the time when you look at seal, any kind of photo ID stuff with seals, it's always when they're hauled out on land, which they do a fair amount, but like 85% of the time they're in water of their lives. So to not know more about, you know, do they go to the same spots in the water? Do they have strong sight fidelity to one place versus another? Do individuals in particular do versus, you know, a whole over the population? That kind of stuff we don't know about what their behavior. We don't know much about the behavior of in-water seals in the first place. So this is kind of a big deal because of this. And this will be her first kind of big paper. She worked with us on the kleptoparasitism paper, but this one is her. She's being the lead on that. So
stay tuned for that. That'll be coming out hopefully sometime next year.
Yeah.
And like I said, it's kind of one of those where I feel like the harbor seal photo ID, a lot of people are like, oh, well, you know, that's been done. Everybody's doing that. But like you said, that's the difference of what we're doing is, again, like capturing these seals and identifying them in the water is really, really uncommon. Like most people do not do that. So it's pretty neat. It's very cool.
Yeah. So we're super excited. Hopefully we'll be submitting that in the near future, probably a little bit after the new year now, but hopefully within the year then we'll have that one out. And so we're very excited to get. We did do a paper last year on harbor seal aggregations too, funnily enough. But that was our first seal paper. So this will be our, you know, kind of real big one. So we're excited about that. And then, I mean, getting out more on the boat, of course, having more interns that hopefully we can get out on the boat as well, right? So we get some boat experience as well. I really am excited about getting more eDNA work going because what's great is that it is expensive to be able to run the samples, to have like the genetics people run through the sequencing. But the great thing is that we can collect samples relatively cheaply and do that first initial thing of like, yes, there's DNA in here on a lower funding level. Still takes money, but not quite as much as the next step. So we can be collecting samples until we get to the point where we can get a bigger grant and hopefully be working in collaboration with organizations like OceanWise and others that are trying to do that work and be able to get something going there. But we can be collecting the information and the data and the samples in the meantime, which is fantastic.
Right. Yeah, kind of huge again.
Yeah, it jumps the timeline, because if we had to wait to start that, then it would be another 2-3 years before we have enough samples to do, you know, so it shortens that quite a bit. Yeah, so and I'm always look forward to, I mean, just more field work. I mean, I love going out into the field and just getting to see what these guys do, and we see new things every year. And you just never know what you're going to see.
Yeah, and it's always fun again, like, you know, the fact that we are able to go out with volunteers, with interns. It's always so not just rewarding for us, but also it's rewarding to see, you know, these people experiencing this for the first time. Some people that are coming out with us, this is the first time they're seeing marine mammals ever in their lives. So it's a pretty cool opportunity for us to not only be collecting this really important research and data, but to be able to share that with other people in our community who may not otherwise have that opportunity. So that's always, I think, a big, I don't know, it's very exciting to just see that through their eyes every time. And like you said, we're seeing different things in the field every time. This year, we saw a lot of sea lions. We saw a lot of stellar sea lions this year in the field, more than we normally have, which is very cool. I still freak out whenever I see sea lions because I did not grow up in a place where there are sea lions. So I get very excited.
I didn't, I grew up in a place where like there was no seals. Too so
true,
like seals
true.
And sea lions, and sea lions are an extra level above that. I'm like, okay, I've gotten used to seals, but now I'm still like, oh my god, it's a stellar, oh my god, it's a California sea lion,
yeah,
so cool.
Yep. So yep. Again, you know, it's still very exciting for us, even though we've been doing it for 9 years, and we're very fortunate, like I said, to be able to share that with others as well in our community. So thank you to everybody who has helped support our work. Thank you to you guys for listening. Thank you to all of our volunteers and interns in both current and in years past, because like Cindy said at the top, we really couldn't do any of this without your support and without your continued help and assistance with our work. So thank you so much for all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And when we go out, we usually have, you know, one of us is leading the session and we have two or three volunteers, and it's so hard to do without those volunteers. Like we can go out by ourselves, but it's, we have two different data sheets and you're taking pictures and you're keeping track of everything. And the volunteers that come out and help us really are how we continue to do the work that we're doing and expanding and what we're doing, to be able to get out in the field up to 5 days a week sometimes, you know,
yep,
between 3 to 5 days a week. That wouldn't happen if we didn't have volunteers. So really I echo what Kat said, you know, thank you to those that come out and volunteer. Thank you to, those that fund, and those that just support us in sharing their information that we have. Because that's the other point, is that we collect this data, we want to put it out in the scientific world, but we want to get it out into the public. And so, you know, we give presentations and go to schools and things like that. But you individually sharing the information around the internet, you know, into other people, really spreads the word as well, and gets people to know and care about these animals. Because without that, it just won't happen. You know, we talk a lot about education and how, you know, how do you get somebody to want to save an animal or a species or an ecosystem, and they have to have some kind of connection to it, and that's what we hope to do with, I think, the podcast, with our outreach with volunteers and interns and giving presentations and things like that, is to create that connection and that love of this amazing world we live in, and particularly the porpoises and seals that are so adorable.
Yep. Exactly. So I think with that, that's kind of it for our year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So hopefully you guys enjoyed this. I know this is a little bit different than our typical podcast fare, but hopefully this was kind of fun to get to hear behind the scenes of what we are actually doing here at PacMam most of the time when we're not podcasting. And hopefully this has inspired you guys as well. If you haven't gone to check out our other resources, our website, our social media, definitely go explore those, learn a little bit more about our long-term research projects, learn more about our opportunities to volunteer if you are local. And yeah, thank you also for listening. We really appreciate it.
Yep. And one thing in there, we do have a YouTube channel that has some educational videos that are short snippets and information, but we also have one of my longer lectures that, if you want to learn all the things that we just talked about, but even more depth with harbor porpoises, you can log on and listen to that, and learn more about these cool animals. So all those places are great places to go for resources. And if you have any questions or information, or you want to just share, either catch us on social media or an email, and we're happy to interact and discuss and see what you guys want to talk about. So. And that with the podcast next year, we're going to, we mentioned this before, but we're going to start running out of marine mammals to highlight.
We already are running out of them.
Yeah.
So Yeah. If you guys have any suggestions for what else you would love to hear from us, if there is anything specific you'd really like to learn, anything you'd like us to dive deeper on, definitely reach out and let us know. I believe you can now actually comment directly on podcast episodes as well, but you can also reach out, like Cindy said, via social media or email. Because we obviously we're doing this for you. So we want to know what you would like to hear, and we'd be happy to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. So reach out and let us know. And we hope you guys have a wonderful holiday season, whether that is warm or cold or somewhere in between, wherever you live. My daughter's 3 and a half and she's like, when's the snow going to come? Because we have to have snow for Christmas, because that's what she sees. And I'm like, oh, well,
here's the thing about weather.
That might not happen, but, you know, manage expectations. So hope you guys have a wonderful holiday and a happy new year. And we are excited to see you next year, at the beginning of January, for probably another Marine Mammal Highlight. And we'll have to figure out who we're going to do for that. So keep an eye on your Instagram stories towards the end of the year, or beginning of January, to help us vote for who's next. But with that, we will leave you guys. Have a great holiday and a happy new year. Bye.
Bye.
This was brought to you by Pacific Mammal Research, a 501c3 nonprofit organization. Check out our website, www.pacmam.org, that's PACMAM, to learn more about us, our research, and the educational opportunities that we provide. Also, help us continue providing fun and educational content like this by donating today. Your help is how we can continue to do our work and share it with you. Thanks!